This is Keep On Cooking, a podcast for people who love cookbooks and want to know more about the authors. It's also a great place to get a weekly dose of culinary inspiration to keep things pumping in the kitchen. So grab a cookbook and keep on cooking. I'm Dustin Harder, and this is Keep On Cooking. Hello, and welcome to Keep On Cooking, the only podcast dedicated to plant-based cookbooks. I'm your host, Dustin Harder, and I gotta pee. It's the Roxy to my Velma. My husband, David Rossetti, is here to help me kick things off this week. How you doing?
Good. Can I kickball change things off?
Yeah, was that a weird intro?
I mean, the I got a pee part, that's kind of like a deep cut, unless you're a real musical theater queen.
And what is it from, David?
From Chicago.
The musical. Does she say it in the movie? Yeah, but she's probably more like Renee Zellweger, like, I got a pee.
Yeah, it's more normal than like,
I got a pee.
And Ryan King's, I got a pee. So for everyone listening who is like, what?
We like musicals, just FYI.
Well, we like musicals, but also I get there's sound bites stuck in my head from 1991 that I'm still fighting off to this day.
Correct.
And one of them, like, if we're ever on a road trip and David's like, I gotta pee, I'm like, I gotta pee. Every time, because when you listen to All That Jazz on the recording of Chicago the Musical, that's how Anne Ryan King says, I gotta pee. And it comes out of nowhere in there too, right?
Yeah, really,
like, it's like,
it's after she shoots Fred Casely.
Don't, oh my God, spoiler.
Oh my God. All right. There's a lot of murder in Chicago. So,
oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So there, now you know. I mean, now you know, everyone.
Spoiler alert.
Well, listen, what's happening? Last week was the
100th
episode, my baby.
So this is the Dalmatian episode?
This is the Dalmatian episode. 101 tons of fun.
That's our little agave bun.
What is that from? No.
Come on now.
Tons. I don't know. Tell me.
Some enchanted.
Oh, South Pacific. Oh, that's why I didn't know. Someone. Oh, boy. Anyway, so
beloved score, but continue.
Okay. I don't know what we're talking about now. I got so distracted at my dislike for the musical South Pacific.
Last week was our 100th episode.
Oh yeah, so we're at 101. Tons of fun. Mm-hmm. Here we go. Ready to roll. We're in the three digits now. I will tell you though, we're giving you one more episode next week, and then we are going on spring break. So prep
spring
yourself
break.
For it. Don't be mad at us. Listen,
going to Cancun.
We're not going to Cancun.
Just kidding. In our minds.
Yeah, I can't even free my mind up enough to do that. Where we are going is Chicago. So by the time we tune back in, we give you more episodes after next week's, we will be recording in Chicago in some sort of new setup, which will be, I know, unknown. Who knows right now?
TBD.
We're masking some serious stress right now under these chilled out voices and faces because y'all, we're selling our home. We're buying a new place, or not buying a new place. We decided to rent for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Decided to rent. And yeah, so a lot happening, but we're very, very excited for it. And of course, we can't wait to tell you all about it when we get back from spring break. But listen, we're on episode 101. We're not going anywhere yet. So I have to tell you, we have one heck of a treat for you today. I just met the author for the first time when we recorded a few weeks ago. We instantly bonded like we had known each other for years. And I love that so much when it happens. It's one of the true gifts of this podcast. I mean, from the cookbook authors to the restaurant owners and chefs when I used to meet them doing the vegan roadie. And I know you can attest to this, David, because we were brought to tears many times. Like, and it often happens off camera, off the mic, like, because you start to get into the depths of like why you run a business or why you wrote a book.
And the challenges that
the
come
challenges,
with that,
right?
And struggles.
But then also, like, it always circles back to the bottom line is that all of us, everyone who's been on this podcast, everyone who was on Vegan Roadie for the most part, everyone's trying to put something better into the world. They're trying to create a better world one bite at a time. And that's definitely what our guest here is doing. And I can't wait for the day that I get to meet her and her husband, Joe, in person. I'm talking about Carla Salinari, author of the book we are here to celebrate today, Abuela's Plant-Based Kitchen, Vegan Cuisine Inspired by Latin and Caribbean Family Recipes.
Yes, Carla Salinari is a certified holistic health coach who specializes in the plant-based lifestyle. Carla uses a highly individualized approach that yields transformative, long-lasting habits through one-on-one private coaching and as a member of Next Level Urgent Care Houston's telehealth team.
Her popular Instagram account, at the Latina Health Coach, inspires others to reconnect with their favorite cultural dishes with plant-based ingredients.
She's also a frequent TV guest on Telemundo and NBC. Carla earned a certificate in holistic nutrition from the Institute of Integrative... Why can I not say that?
This is fun.
Integrative nutrition in New York City.
Oh, I always feel like it's me. That was fun for me. I really enjoyed that. You did great.
Okay.
Well done. Well done. Well, listen, she was raised in Miami and Puerto Rico, but now she is living it up in Brooklyn with her family. I absolutely adore this woman, and it is my pleasure to welcome to the podcast the fabulous Carla Salinari. She's the health coach transforming people's lives with long-lasting habits, and she is here to help the world go plant-based, Latin style. It's Carla Salinari. Welcome to Keep On Cooking. Great to see you.
Dustin, thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing even better now that you're here, and I have your icebreaker question for you.
Go ahead.
So, what is the scariest thing you've ever done for fun?
Write a book.
Great answer.
I just launched myself into that one and I was like, here I am.
That is a great answer. Very good. Oh, I love it. Mine's wear a jumpsuit.
We should have coordinated it. It should have been a thing. Like there should be like an enforced dress code here. Like I am a huge jumpsuit fan. In fact,
I love it.
I'm wearing a jumpsuit in the photos that we took and some of the photos that we took in the book. I love a good jumpsuit, right?
I love that. I've had one before. I have another one. I've had two actually that were shorts. So it was like, would you call that a jumpsuit still?
No, we call those rompers.
Romper. I had a romper. So this is the first attempt at a pant jumpsuit. So I think I'm feeling it. I think you saw my IG, like it's green. I'm feeling like a little Top Gun-ish in this, but
very
like,
cool.
It's fine. It'll be fine. I'm settling in.
It's all fun and games until it's time to go to the bathroom and then you rethink all your decisions.
Well, I was thinking about that. I was like, I'm home all day. I'm working from home. I go to the bathroom. It's fine. But I'm like, to wear this out to an event seems like a bit of a situation potentially.
It's a lot. Yeah.
So I'll keep that in mind then when I'm going.
That means it has to be like a really fierce jumpsuit because then, you know, like all bets are off.
And it's got to be worth it. It's got to be worth it. Yeah, it's got to be worth it. Well, we're here to chat about your wonderful book, A Blaylist Plant-Based Kitchen, and how it can be difficult to have multiple generations in the kitchen, each with their own ideas on food, but A Blaylist Plant-Based Kitchen puts them on the same page. You are inspired by your upbringing in two culinary worlds, mm-hmm. vegetarian and Puerto Rican. You are a holistic health coach, reintroducing traditional Latin and Caribbean recipes with whole, high-quality plant-based ingredients. Now, Carla Zolling, what led to this book? Obviously, cooking sounds like it was part of your life at an early age, but when did it switch to your profession and also become all plant-based?
Yeah, so my father and his side of the family has been plant-based since 1975, when plant-based was like not even a thing, much less plant-based in Puerto Rico. It was like they were the odd community. And my aunt and her then husband opened what would be known as the first vegetarian restaurant in Puerto Rico in the 90s. Wow. Now, they were very ahead of their time and are still very ahead of their time now. And unfortunately, the restaurant only had like about a 5 or a 6 year run. Mm-hmm. But the recipes that were used in the restaurant and those recipes that my family had flipped, we like to call them flips. So it's like when you turn a traditionally meat heavy dish into a plant-based alternative, these were recipes that had been circulating in my family for a very, very long time. Mm. A lot of these recipes were part of the restaurant that our family had back in the 90s. Aww. And these recipes were recipes that you know, just continue to celebrate our Latin culture and traditions. And it were recipes that I knew that I wanted to share with the community. Now, my plant-based journey starts when, you know, from my family, but it, but I didn't use it as my profession until later on in life. Like, I moved to New York to go to school. I went to the new school. You know, I worked in finance. Like, that was my life. And then I slowly started to want to shift gears a little bit, helping the community, sharing what I know. I then formalized it. I went back to school. I got a certification in holistic nutrition. And again, I kind of in that time made it my side hustle. So I was, you know, helping the Latin community eat more plants. I mean, mm-hmm. that's it. And still today, right? We're let's just eat more plants. Let's, mm-hmm. let's go back to basics. So since then, I have been sharing those recipes. And during the pandemic, I said, hey, to my family, I said, we don't have anything better to do. Like, I really suck at making sourdough bread. I've tried, and I'm just going to shift gears and I'm going to write a book.
That's so funny. Well, I have something to say about sourdough, but first I just want to say how beautiful it is that you've been able to take your history with your family and put it in this book.
Yeah.
Like, what yeah. That must feel so wonderful to be able to do that.
Yeah. Listen, all joking aside, and we could talk about the sourdough bread in a second, which I have so much respect for, by the way. Like, well, like so say, much respect.
All I have to say about it is I also have tried and I'm like, I'm terrible at this.
Yeah. I mean,
it's still continuing to try every now and then, but I'm like,
You know, my husband's like, if I see one more bucket of flour show up at this door, like, we're going to have a serious conversation. And I'm like, you know what, Joe? Fine. Fine. I'm retiring the jersey.
He would not be happy with my pantry right now. I have one drawer that's all of these just like random flowers that are like, yeah. please help me. Please use me for something. And I'm yeah. like, I used you once. You're fine.
Yeah, you're fine. Now you go there and you sit
yeah,
pretty.
You go there. Yeah. I'll call on you again. I promise. It might yes. be a year or two, but I'm coming.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I thought it would be a wonderful opportunity to reconnect in a different way, right? So what we did while working on the book was that we did it through Zoom. And I would have my aunt, you know, my mom, we would be calling aunts and uncles in Puerto Rico, like, hey, do you remember abuela used to make da da da? And we slowly just started to build the book and put these recipes together. And I remember saying, you know, telling my husband, I said, I want this to be more than a recipe book. I want this to be a how-to guide, mm-hmm. right? I want it to have bits and pieces of information, because it's one thing to say like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to attempt to eat more plants. I want to dip my toe in this plant-based pool eventually, you know, but why? Sure. Because when we learn why we're doing things, it sticks better. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to remember. So when you're making other choices as it relates to food and lifestyle, you remember. So I knew that that was a very, very important component that I wanted to include in the book. And that's why we made it a how-to book. So it has everything from like, how to restock your pantry? Like, mm-hmm. what are the staples? What is the hardware that you need? What is it that you need to do? And then we go into the recipes that include nutritional facts that are really important. And also it includes different alternatives, right? So if you don't have this, you can swap for that, because thinking outside the box as well is also really important. Sometimes we can get caught up into, if the recipe ingredients aren't perfect, then you kind of like, oh, well, maybe I'll save this for another time. But no, we want to encourage you. Look for something else in your cupboard. I'm pretty sure you have something in your pantry that you can use in place of that ingredient that you may not have, right? And then towards the end of the book, we have a meal plan and we have a note section where you can sit there and meal plan and meal prep and really feel like you're doing this rather than just making one-off recipes. Like, I wanted this to become a lifestyle. I wanted this to become this blueprint that so many people can use and share for generations to come, right?
That's great. You're giving people a plan, essentially. So right. It becomes a staple in their kitchen. They can turn to it again and again to make it more than a one-off, as you're saying, which absolutely. I think we can all appreciate, because also people invest money in these books. So it is great when it's, you know, not to put any other books down, but if you talk about sourdough, for example, like unless I'm really getting into making sourdough bread all the time, I'm probably going to make like the one staple recipe a couple times a year, you know, right. Maybe, you know, who knows though. I know some people getting into that bread, so I shouldn't say that.
Yeah. Oh, it's a thing. It's a thing, Dustin. Like there are communities
online.
Like it's a very serious thing. And let me tell you, I respect the craft 100%. So much more now. So if you want to charge me $10, like I will gladly pay you.
Absolutely. Because I will pay you for that.
Yes, I understand the work, the dedication that goes in there. Like, I mean, it's like having a newborn, and like that is a lot of work.
There is a book called Bread, B-R-E-D, by Ed and Natasha Tatten. They own a cafe called Bread, B-R-E-D, in Vancouver. And they were on to talk about it. And it's all these beautiful sourdough loaves. And I was so just amazed at sort of... And I was reading over it again the other night, because again, finding my sourdough way. I was reading the instructions and they're clear, but I was also like, this is so invested right now.
It is.
Like you said, it's like giving birth to a baby. Yeah. It's kind of
You have to take care of that starter. You have to feed her. She gets hungry. She gets mad. Yeah. She doesn't like it's too hot. It has to be the right temperature.
Yes.
It's a lot.
All right. Well, we'll do a whole nother, you and I will have some sourdough shenanigans one day.
Yes.
Or we won't. Yes. We'll just talk about it. We'll buy some sourdough from the professionals and we will enjoy it together.
We'll give credit where credit is due.
That's exactly right.
Because I think I've, like I've said, retired the jersey.
Yeah. You know, you make choices. Well, when we talk about cookbooks though, since I brought up another cookbook, do you have in your landscape of cookbooks, a vegan cookbook that you turn to in the very beginning? I mean, you've been at this for some time, but I'm curious, there was a book in your history that you really loved or a first vegan cookbook that you owned?
Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily classified as like a vegan cookbook, but it's definitely a celebration of whole foods, right? It does not include any animal protein, but like for Love and Lemons, it was like one of the first books that I picked up and I was like, look at all these beautiful dishes that you can create with simple fruits and vegetables, nuts, seeds, whole grains that you have. And it's beautiful and it's simple and it's crisp and fresh. That is one of my old time. I have all of her books. I absolutely love her. I love the simplicity of it because I am not a trained chef. And I love to say that because sometimes this can become intimidating, right? I think that, people wish that they, you know, could just go and understand like, you know, acid, fat, salt, heat, like all of this, like this formula, this magic formula. When in reality, I just want to look for a recipe that has ingredients that I already have in my pantry and that it's not going to take me 3 hours to make.
Yeah.
Although, again, I respect those recipes, but I am, you know, busy. I have family. I got kids to feed. You know what I mean? I wanted it to be simple. And I found that in For Love and Lemons. That's really, really a great book. What else? Now, you're putting me on the spot here, Dustin. So I like the Korean vegan. That's a really great one too. Just to celebrate those, you know, and then I have a lot of, peers in the space. I have, you know, foods by doctors. Fiberfield is a really good one as well, by Dr. Will B. And, you know, my friends at the Type 2 Diabetes Revolution have a really great plant-based cookbook that I refer to a lot and use to help my patients. So now, you know, the story of my book kind of continues to develop where I have since started working with clinics to help the Latin community eat better. And in turn, you know, help reduce the risk of so many food related conditions, which unfortunately have affected so much of the Latin population. And, you know, we use the plant-based method, right? We share, you know, that philosophy of, you know, reducing or eliminating completely the consumption of all animal protein, including dairy and cheese and eggs, and just really focusing on celebrating the true nature of plants and legumes and whole grains and things like that. So that is how it started and that is where it's going. And it's been an incredible journey and a very rewarding one too.
That's great. And hats off to not being a trained chef and writing the book. And I'm saying that because I am a trained chef. And I tell you, I appreciate, we tell people all the time, oh, it's easy. You just do it. The fact is, and I'm saying this to all listeners, it's not easy. You can make it easy, but it's just like anything else. You've got to pick books up. You've got to learn things. You've got to Google it. You've got to and practice. And then it gets easier over time, like anything else. But I love recipes like yours that are straightforward. Anyone can do them. You're giving substitutes as well. And I feel like sometimes, and all my chef friends don't get mad at me, it gets a little overcomplicated sometimes where I'm like, why are we doing these 7 steps when we could have done just the first, but you know what I mean? So absolutely. I appreciate both worlds of it. 100%. But I really love that you're wearing that as a badge of honor, because it should be, because I think we have a lot to learn from people who are putting meals on the table quickly. Like, there's a skill to that, you know, and that's not necessarily a chef skill set. That is a food skill set. And that is making things delicious in a small amount of time. And that takes practice and time and effort to learn how to do those things and then share it with other people. So I think it's fantastic that you're doing that.
Thank you. Thank you. And that means a lot to me coming from a trained chef.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I appreciate the world. Well, let's dive into your book. When it comes to the food in this book, you start us off with condiments. And what's a condiment must have from this chapter that you always have to have on hand?
Adobo, sazón, sofrito.
Yes.
Now, let me explain to you what those are. Adobo and sazón are a blend of beautiful aromatic spices that include cumin and turmeric and black pepper and annatto to give food its vibrant color, right? In Puerto Rico, we pride on our, it's almost like Puerto Rican all-purpose seasoning, right? But if you think about it and you make it at home, right, and you're able to really pay attention to the quality of the ingredients that you're using, it could be a really powerful way not only to add so much more flavor and depth to your dish, but also to really boost the nutritional mm-hmm. content of the foods that you're having, right? So we have the adobo and the sazón. Then we have sofrito. Sofrito is the blend that is used to make most, if not all, Puerto Rican dishes. And that is just a very aromatic blend of cilantro, garlic, pepper, onions. Some people like to add different types of peppers and, you know, different colors of the onion. And it really is so aromatic and it's so powerful. It, peppers have more vitamin C than an orange, and cilantro is anti-inflammatory and garlic is antifungal, right? So you blend all of those vegetables together and you use them as the base. So right there between the adobo, the sazón, and the sofrito, you have such a beautiful and colorful assortment of vegetables that give your food so much depth and flavor, and also the spices, which are so great for your health as well. So in the condiments, that is a staple. Plus, it helps so much to cut down the time that you spend in the kitchen. You don't have to, chop up the garlic and the onions and the cilantro, because you just have a cube of your sofrito that you made and you can just throw it in the pot.
But that's the cube tip. Isn't that the ice cube tip you're talking about now?
So tell everyone about the ice cube tip. Yes. So, sofrito is a staple in Puerto Rican food. And I would go as far as to say it's an important thing to have. When you make sofrito, it's usually a family affair. There's usually music blasting in the background. You usually have your abuela saying like, no, add more this and add more that. And then when you make it, you divide it into either different like containers, and then you can give it out to your friends and your family. I mean, who's making sofrito? That's a really big deal, right? When you make it at home, a tip that I recommend, and we talk about this in the book, is freeze it in ice cubes. One cube of sofrito will yield you about a heaping tablespoon. And that's pretty much what you need in order to season the food for, I would say, 4 servings, right? So you throw it in there. That's at least 10 minutes that, you know, that we're cutting back on the cooking time, right? And the flavors are just so delicious. But that is a trick. And then you take it out of the ice cube tray and you put it in Ziploc bags and you put it in your freezer. And it really is a huge time saver.
I love that. Such good tips. And just the story behind Sofritas as well. I love that. And you've got other notable condiments in here. You've also got, I love seeing the cashew condensed milk in here,
because
people are always bugging about not being able to find readily available versions of plant-based condensed milk. Though, listeners, I did find a coconut condensed milk at Target, shockingly, the other day. I didn't even need it. I was like, but I will grab this and take it home. Thank you so much, because who knows when I will. But just the same, if I didn't find that, I need this recipe. So it's nice to have a recipe front and center for this. And other notables in here are a bevy of dressings like cilantro dressing and citrus dressing. There's a chimichurri in here and just really great stuff. You've got a mayo ketchup as well. We're moving into the breakfast and brunch chapter. What's a crowd pleaser from this chapter to serve the brunch crowd?
So the one of my favorite ones are the cornmeal fritters. Those are delicious. It's actually my grandmother's recipe. You can make these fritters sweet or salty. And the best part about them is that you can replace the butter for vegan butter, and you can use vegan cheese instead of dairy cheese. And it's so easy to make, and you can serve it with some mayo ketchup. Mayo ketchup is like the OG Puerto Rican dressing, right? Like, it is just a blend of mayo. In our case, we're going to use vegan mayo, which you can get it at the store or you can make it at home. And then ketchup. And then you add some fresh garlic and salt and pepper, and it goes with everything. And you dip it. So that is a great brunch item. It's also a great appetizer. We have in there the French toast, which is always like a wow dish, because we're using the brine of a can of chickpeas.
It looks so good.
Yes, they're so delicious and so easy to make. And you know what? We eliminate food waste, right? We're using the chickpeas and other recipes throughout the book, but we're not throwing away that brine because it works as an egg white substitute.
Yeah.
It also works to make a mayo. You can use it as well. And you can make these French toast, which is really, really great. Those are two of my favorite recipes. There's also the Mexican inspired corn salad. You know, corn gets a bad rap, but corn has been around since the beginning of time. It's a whole grain. It's, you know, it's wonderful. It has fiber. It's great. I am pro, you know, corn, and I love it. And, you know, all these recipes are just so easy to make. And most importantly, they're so flavorful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can share this book with the vegan community, and of course they're going to love it, but also it's for the non-vegan community, so they can come into our space and experience all the wonders that our cuisine has to offer, for sure.
Yes, you're making it available to everyone. Some other ones in here, we got baked oatmeal, carrot cake muffins. We got some chia pudding, chickpea patties, classic BLT, fish-free ceviche, kale salad with garbanzo beans, mayo-less potato salad, and a sweet potato parfait is in here. Tell me about the sweet potato parfait.
Yes, so the sweet potato parfait is a play on the traditional parfait, where we're swapping out the yogurt and we just boiled some beautiful sweet potatoes and added some maple syrup and some vanilla, and we sweetened it and we made a cream out of it. And that is so satisfying. And not only that, packed with fiber, antioxidants that are so good, beta carotene, right? So it's so delicious and it's so filling. And what you could do is that you can then build your parfait. So it's a fun activity for the entire family to make together. People can do, you can set it up, right, as like, you know, a tray where everybody adds whatever fillings they love. Also, one of the recipes that's in there for those carrot cake muffins, I developed that recipe for my daughter. It's really fun to make. All you need is a blender and a few really simple ingredients. You pour the batter, you bake it, and it's fluffy and it's tender on the outside, crunchy in all the right places. And it's really, really simple, right? This is my key with this book, is to make it as simple as possible. And I didn't want it to overwhelm the community. I wanted it to be using all the ingredients that you probably already have at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And I'm going to top the end of this chapter off here with a tofu scramble burrito.
I mean, what's a vegan cookbook without some tofu scramble, right? And I do make the tofu scramble with some adobo because it has those familiar flavors, but also the turmeric is going to give the tofu that yellowy color that's going to simulate egg.
Yeah.
Right? So that you don't feel. And then you wrap it up in a burrito, because who doesn't love a burrito?
If you don't love a burrito, we're not talking to you. That's it. Right. Burritos are delicious. Burritos are everything. I made a burrito yesterday. It was so good. Love it. So good. Well, it's the best. It's the headliner of the chapter, I might say. It's at the end there. So we'll call her that tofu scramble burrito the headliner there. The next chapter is our lunch and dinner chapter. What's a favorite for you to have for lunch from here?
So the sandwiches are really good. There is a wonderful recipe called Jibarito sandwich. And that is, let me tell you a story of where that originated from. So there is a big controversy that it originated. Some people think it originated in Puerto Rico. Other people say it originated in Chicago. Hey. And you're going to have to tell us if that's true or not. So basically the story behind it is that the chef ran out of bread and he used plantain instead. And I'm here for it. I'm here for the substitution of bread for plantain. And then let's make it vegan and substitute the steak for delicious marinated portobello mushrooms. Let's add some mayo ketchup to that and some colorful veggies. And that is by far one of my favorite lunch recipes from the book.
Is it served like an open-faced sandwich?
No, it's served as a real sandwich with the two slices of bread substituted for two big slices of, you can make it in the air fryer or you can deep fry it, you know, everything in moderation.
Sure.
And then you just make the sandwich that way. And it's a dream.
It sounds delicious. There was a place I had in New Orleans once, but it was open face, so you were eating it like that. But I wonder if the concept came from this actually.
Originally. Yeah, listen, at the end of the day, you can make it however you want, right? Sure. It's your kitchen, your rules.
That's right.
Right? But it you know, the traditional way of serving it is like that, as a sandwich.
Okay.
As a sandwich.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then we've got, I don't know why this is like, it's screaming at me for me to make it like tonight. Grilled cauliflower steaks with cilantro chimichurri. I love cauliflower and chimichurri on cauliflower steaks. I'm here for it. I'm so into it. So
yeah, it's a super easy. And the reason that we added that recipe to the book was because I know that a lot of the plant-based community struggles, like when they go to a barbecue, like, what am I going to eat? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I like to recommend a few things. You can do the tofu skewers, which are always really fun. You can throw some mushrooms on the grill, which are delicious. But how about grilling some cauliflower steaks and adding a delicious dressing?
Yeah.
Right. It has been my experience, and I'm sure there has been a similar experience for you as well, where you have the vegans and the non-vegans kind of just like gushing over this beautifully constructed plate that is just filled with so much goodness and depth and flavor, right? And that is what this recipe is.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so true. I like the simplistic nature of it. And you're right. It does sound like one of those dishes. You're going to have non-vegans just going, ooh. And you're like, y'all, it's vegetables. It's vegetables.
It is. And well, that chimichurri sauce is, and that's something else that I really wanted to, you know, put out in the book as well, is that you can make the chimichurri sauce for this recipe, but you can also incorporate in so many different dishes. You can even add it to the plantain sandwich if you wanted, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can add it to whatever, to the eggplant sandwich, which is really delicious as well. There's the loaded nachos. You can drizzle that as well on there. So I wanted the recipes to be versatile. I wanted you to be able to customize whatever you wanted, right? Maybe grab a little from here, add it to there, and things like that.
I didn't eat before this, and now I'm like, I think I'm having that cauliflower for dinner.
Ooh, I can't wait. You're going to have to tell us how you like it.
Yes. Well, I know what I'm having for dinner then, but for someone who just picks this book up, after they listen to this, they order the book, what's the first thing they should make from this chapter for dinner?
For dinner, let's see. So for dinner, the green rice. The green rice is just one of those recipes that you are always going to remember. I have made this recipe for so many people that have come into my home to eat, and it's aromatic, it's amazing, and it's so simple to do. What you do is you grab cilantro, parsley, you can add some Swiss chard, basically grab 2 cups worth of green leafy vegetables. Mm-hmm. And you're going to add some olive oil and you're going to add some garlic, and you're going to make similar to a chimichurri, similar to a pesto, that consistency of a paste. You're going to add that into a pan and then you're going to cook your rice, but you're going to toast it first so that it absorbs all the flavors of the paste. Mm. And then you're going to let it cook, and then you're going to serve it with peas and scallions. And that dish alone is so, it stands out. It's a beautiful dish. It's simple, simple to make, and it pairs well with so many different things.
Yeah, already I was like, I think that would go well with the cauliflower. Serve a little cauliflower steaks over that. Be so good. Now I'm seeing eggplant parm with tofu ricotta cheese. Now this is not the first Italian situation I've seen in this book. So do you want to speak to the Italian nature that pops up in the book from time to time?
I do. So my husband, Joe, and for those of you who are part of the Latina Health Coach community on Instagram, Joe is a hot commodity. Joe will pop in unexpected and, you know, sprinkle his, you know, funny little comments. And, you know, Joe grew up in a very Italian household where Sunday dinners were, you know, very serious. They were taken very serious. Yes. And, you know, the Sunday gravy, which is their marinara sauce, was a really big deal.
But in this book is Joe's marinara, right?
It is Joe's marinara. So Joe's mom passed away when he was young, and this is her recipe. Of course, it's been modified to make it plant-based and to fit our dietary requirements. But I wanted, Joe has been such an instrumental part of this journey as well, that I wanted to celebrate the fact that him and his family have allowed us to manipulate those recipes in a way that is so delicious. And we encourage, you know, we serve them at home, we serve them at parties. So I wanted to, you know, celebrate Joe and his culture as well, because this is a family cookbook, right? Yes. And, you know, so we made the marinara sauce, we made the eggplant parm, and there's a great story behind the eggplant parm. It's like one of the first recipes that Joe turned plant-based. And he, you know, as Joe does, he's a perfectionist and he wanted everything to be perfect, and he really nailed it. Like he really, really nailed it. And he seasoned the tofu in the same way that his family would have seasoned traditional ricotta cheese. But we did it with tofu. But the rest of the seasonings are there. So it's fresh garlic and fresh parsley. And we made it in a way that is made without being fried, because you can make it in the oven or you can make it in the air fryer. But it celebrates what he and his family are about, you know, coming together to build these beautiful dinners on Sundays and share them with the rest of the family. So you will see that there. Also, the pesto under the condiment section is dedicated to my father-in-law, who always had a beautiful basil plant in his garden in the summer. And he would always say, take the basil, take the basil. So we took the basil and we would always make the pesto. Mm-hmm. And that pesto dressing does. And because you're a chef, I really want you to try it, and I want your critique on it. Is by far one of the best pesto recipes I've ever had. Like, I will dare to say that. It is so delicious. It goes perfectly well with so many different things, and it doesn't have any cheese. We use nutritional yeast instead, but it really celebrates, you know, Joe and his family and their culture as well.
I'm looking at it right now. I don't have to make it to tell you it's fantastic. It looks perfect.
It's so good.
It looks perfect. I want it. I love pesto. Also, I'm like, I'll accept any dare to make pesto. Thank you. Anyone who challenges me, make the pesto. I'm like, great. I can never make enough of it. I love it.
Right? It's so good. So delicious.
Well, what a celebration this book is. I love it so much. You even got a sweet potato shepherd's pie in here. We've got tempeh stuffed plantain cups. Just so many yummy things. A lentil soup, a chickpea stew, pickled green banana salad, red kidney bean stew. You've got these loaded sweet potato nachos with cilantro dressing. I'm here for that. So many great things. And we've got desserts here as our next chapter.
Yes, the desserts is one of my favorite chapters. Yes. It celebrates so much of my family. So interestingly, most of my dad's side of the family is incredible at recreating the salty dishes, but kind of lack a little in the baking section. And that's where my mom comes in. So my mom is the baker of the family. There she is, the OG Nanette.
Look at that. There she is. I didn't see this photo when I was going through here.
She is so sweet. And, you know, she's not entirely plant-based. And I'm like, Mom, are you up for the challenge? And she's like, let's do it. So what we did is that we recreated so many of our family favorites in, and we made them plant-based. In this chapter, you see the cranberry cookies, the oatmeal cranberry cookies. My mother makes those every single Christmas.
Love it.
The banana bread is inspired by my maternal grandmother's banana bread recipe. So that recipe is a crowd pleaser. The arroz con leche sin leche, which translates into rice pudding without milk, is a traditional Cuban staple. And because I did grow up in Miami as well with a lot of Cuban influence, my mother did learn how to make this recipe. It's so delicious. And we, you know, we veganized it. And that's a crowd pleaser. And that one is really great too, because if you have leftover rice from the week, you can make that. As long as the rice isn't seasoned, and it's a simple rice, you can use that to make the rice pudding, and you eliminate food waste and you turn it into a beautiful dessert. You can share with the family. A little goes a long way. The barritas de chocolate, which are just kind of like these chocolate chip cake bars, is a recipe that I developed for my daughter. And it's the recipe that they always ask me to make for bake sales. So if you're listening to this and you've been to any of the bake sales for Carolina School, this is it. I always make the same thing. Chivato de calabaza has a beautiful story behind it. This recipe was my grandmother's recipe from my dad's side, and she made it. She would make it for any time somebody asked her to make a dessert for a party. And when we started recreating this recipe, our family member, it became a very nostalgic thing. You know, we brought it back, and I think it was like one of those recipes that had been buried for such a long time. And when we decided to bring it back to the book, it was really wonderful. It was a really, really great experience to do that.
I love that. And I'm feeling it looks so delicious too. I mean, wow. It looks so yummy in these photos in here. Everything looks so good. And it's interesting about those cranberry oatmeal cookies. My mother-in-law makes oatmeal cookies every Christmas. And now I'm like, thinking I might take the cranberry ones to give it a little twist.
That's right.
But I'm looking at I'm obsessed with mango. And there's a mango pudding in here that is so easy to make.
So easy to make. And that has the secret ingredient, which is silken tofu. And with a lot of my community members, they're like afraid of tofu. Sure. They're like, don't really know. They're intimidated by it. Mm-hmm. And I always say, start with sweet recipes. And, you know, you can substitute the dairy in a lot of the recipes with silken tofu. Yeah. And the mango one was one of the first recipes dessert recipes that I started to share with people that were looking for healthier alternatives to desserts. We are, as I'm sure is the case with so many other cultures, a sweet culture. We love our sweets, we love our desserts, and we love our tropical fruits. So this is a recipe that you can customize. You can add mango, but you can add pineapple, you can add strawberry, you can do whatever you want. Because what is going to give it that creaminess is the silken tofu. And really, tofu adapts to whatever other flavors you combine it with. Yeah. And that was the goal for this recipe.
I love it. And everybody, she's also got a flan in here. How hard was the flan to go plant-based?
You know, let's be real here. I think the flan recipe was one of those recipes that gave us the hardest time. Sure. Because...
I mean, there's a reason I asked the question.
Oh my God. And that is because of the thickening component.
Yeah.
Right? We tried so many different ways of doing it. We tried cornstarch as a thickening agent, and that was just way too hard. And then, you know, we tried a bunch of different things. And then finally, we settled on agar agar, which is derived from algae. It does not taste like the ocean. I always have to say that. And a little goes a long way. It's only about a fourth of a teaspoon. And really, if you just take your time, it's a very delicate recipe, but it yields beautiful, like beautiful results. It's so lovely. And the best part is that it doesn't have to bake in the oven for an hour like traditional flan recipe does. You just chill it and then you put it in the refrigerator, and it's delicious. It's coconutty and it's so mild in flavor, and then you've got that caramel on top, and it's so good. It's so good.
Listeners, sometimes you got to watch on YouTube because I'm holding up pictures when I can, and there is a gorgeous picture. It looks so yummy.
Yeah.
Well, this moves us into beverages. I hate to see this end, but here we are in the last chapter here. Is there a beverage for you that you knew had to be in this book when you started writing it?
Coquito. Yeah. Coquito is Puerto Rican eggnog. That's what I love to call it, you know? And it is a traditional drink that we make in Puerto Rico during Christmas. And every family makes it different. Every abuela has a different trick up her sleeve that nobody knows about, including mine. And I knew that it was one of those recipes that we needed to include in the book because it is such an important part of our culture. And I didn't want to leave it out because who doesn't like to celebrate Christmas with a little Puerto Rican eggnog? So going back to the powerful ingredient that is those soaked cashews, we use soaked cashews to thicken the consistency because it really is thicker than an eggnog, I would say, Dustin.
Sure.
And it has coconut cream and it has coconut milk, and you can choose to add the alcohol or you can leave it purely as a mocktail. It's completely up to you and what you like. But that is one of the recipes that I definitely knew we had to have in this book. Also, you know, piña colada is not traditionally made with dairy because it's just made with like coconut milk and pineapple. But the reason that I included it is because if we are not careful, it could be a complete sugar bomb, right? When you make it with the conventional ingredients. So first, it's my father's favorite drink, which is so funny. My father does not drink alcohol, but he loves a good virgin piña colada. So I knew we had to add it into the book, but the goal with this recipe was to share with the community that you could have a delicious recipe that didn't have to be loaded with all of those sugary ingredients, and you can make it in a more natural way without sacrificing the texture and the taste of it as well.
Mm-hmm. And I also love myself a virgin pina colada, so I am thrilled to see this in here. And I actually just put I folded the page on the coquito because my husband loves eggnog every Christmas. He kind of goes, he gets a little obsessive over looking at the different plant-based brands that are available. Yeah. But I think we need to give these recipes a whirl come Christmas time, so that we can make our own and put our own little spin on it, like you're saying there.
I would love that. And then in the rest of the book, we have other ways to tweak traditional cocktail recipes. Like, I love to make a margarita and it doesn't need to have simple syrup in it. Like, you can use a 1 teaspoon of good quality maple syrup and give it, you know, a nice sweet taste, and it doesn't change the flavor. On the contrary, it's nice and light. It feels good. So that's something that I wanted to share in the book as well, because this is a nutrition guide, right? I wanted to talk about different alternatives that you can incorporate, whether it's in traditional recipes or more modern recipes, right? So You know, and we do have some mocktails in here as well.
Yeah.
Using kombucha, which, as you know, is wonderful for gut health. It's all the rage these days. And, you know, for those of you that are not into it, it's a really great way to just add a little fizz and a little sweetness that is also going to promote positive and good and healthy digestive health.
Absolutely. And this is such a simple recipe too, to pick up, sort of like, you know, people get kombucha and you can, you know, take that to a party and walk around with it, but it's really nice to like add a splash of this, apple juice and a little bit of lime juice.
Sure.
And just those things for those people listening that do not drink alcohol, those types of things, when you, the lime juice, like things like that, coconut water, items like that really can just like jazz up any sort of like sparkling beverage or anything and elevate it to like a mocktail status, essentially.
I love it.
So I love this guide that you have in here. Fantastic. Fantastic all the way around. That is Abuela's Plant-Based Kitchen, everybody. Now, listen, Carla, it's time for your book brag. What, when it comes to this book, what's something that you're most proud of?
You know, I'm most proud of the celebration of our culture. I know that there's a lot of resistance to change as it relates to eating healthy because people often think that they have to abandon their cultural dishes. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, I wanted this book to be a celebration of not only our cultural foods, our traditions that are so important, a celebration of the love that we have for our ancestors and all the amazing things that they brought into our lives, one of them being food. So I'm really proud of being able to put together this project to not only celebrate that, but to also promote a healthier lifestyle for the community in a way that is approachable, right? In a way that people can come together in the kitchen, whether it's the older generation or the younger generation. It happens in my kitchen all the time. I have my mom when she comes into town. I have my daughter. I have my husband. I have my friends, right? And it becomes just this amazing celebration of food, which brings us so much joy, mm-hmm. right? So I say, let's break free from restrictive diets, foods that don't let us celebrate our culture, and let's celebrate our culture, but in a way that promotes good health as well. And that has been my goal with this project. And a humble brag is that this is the second print run of the book. So my publisher called and said in July, hey, our warehouse is sold out of your book. And I say that as a humble brag, yes, but also I say that because I think the community is ready for this, right? Yeah. It's been a long time coming. People are sick. They feel bad. Everything they've been doing up until now isn't working. So let's, you know, go back to basics. Let's eat the rainbow. Let's, you know, eliminate ultra processed foods, animal protein. Let's stick to eating the rainbow and, you know, promoting that feeling good sensation. So I'm really proud of that. Another book brag is that it was picked up by Dan Buettner of the Blue Zones. Yeah. And, you know, so many of the recipes that we have in this book align with the philosophies of the Blue Zones. The Blue Zones are areas around the world where they have the highest population of centenarians, which are people that live to 100. So there's a lot to be said about this. And I'm proud of it. It brings me so much joy. And also creating a legacy for my daughter. I want her to feel proud about the work that we've done as a family together. And, you know, hopefully she, you know, continues with that. And that is, you know, when I'm no longer around.
Absolutely. I love that. I love all of those book brags. And I want to vouch for the fact, because I think a lot of people get hung up on this when they think about plant-based. I want to vouch for the fact I've, you know, gone through this book and it is accessible. It's accessible. The ingredients are accessible, which I think sounds like it was a goal of yours. And I just mm-hmm. want to say well done on that, but also for everyone listening, like it is actually accessible ingredients and recipes that are achievable and approachable. So congratulations on a beautiful, beautiful book.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for allowing me to share my project with your community and this labor of love that, you know, we have put together. It's been quite the journey, and bringing it back, one of the scariest things that I've done, yet rewarding, has been this book.
Yes, yes. It's meant to be scary, or else it's not worth it, I guess, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Speaking of scary, are you ready for your rapid fire round of questions?
Ooh, I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right, here we go. Pancakes or waffles?
Pancakes.
Favorite ingredient to have in a salad?
Chickpeas.
Mm. Do you collect anything? Rescue animals excluded.
Books.
Very good. Very good. Favorite date night for you and Joe? Joe. Right, Joe?
Yes.
Said it right?
Nachos.
Joe got it right. Joe's marinara,
yeah, Joe.
Right?
Yeah, marinara, right.
So
Joe.
What's your favorite date night with Joe?
Our favorite date night is going to our favorite vegan Mexican spot and having their nachos. I love nachos. I think nachos is like such a celebration of all things that are amazing.
Can David and I double date with you and Joe and get some
nachos? I would
nachos
love
then?
Nothing more. Like,
what's
there is
your
this
favorite Mexican place to get the nachos at?
Oh, ha ha ha, in Williamsburg. Oh, like, top notch. Like, dream. The best, hands down.
Hands down.
You know, hands down. Like, they okay make the best. So Joe and I go, we have a spicy margarita, we have the nachos, and it's like one of my favorite things to do. Also exploring different vegan spots. I mean, mm-hmm, we live in the mecca of vegan spots at the moment, I would like to say. Researching them, you know, I have my list is really long here, yeah, in New York. So like there's always a new one coming
there's
up.
Always, the something
always
new
a
try
new one. Yeah. But I would say nachos Mexican food is like
delicious.
It never disappoints. It's you never know, it never.
Never disappoints. David and I did have disappointing nachos one time, and we were like, how does this happen? How did you even do this? You had to work to make these not good. It's like the one time I had bad pizza in Omaha, Nebraska. Nebraska, thank you very much. How did you make bad pizza? You had to work hard to make that pizza bad. It's literally, yeah, sauce and crust and toppings. Like, yeah, it's bread. Like, anyway.
Well, it depends who you ask, because if you ask somebody from New York City, they're like, it's about the water and how the dough, sure, and the sauce. We got it, you know, the sauce, you know.
For me, if there's bread, I'm pleased pretty easily. So I'm like, how'd y'all mess this up for me? Like, come on, there's supposed to be bread. I'm supposed to be satisfied. All right. Okay. All right. What's your favorite quick food item to make when you need a meal fast?
Rice, beans, and avocado.
Ah, barbecue sauce or hot sauce?
Barbecue sauce.
Favorite flavor of ice cream?
Oh, God. Pistachio.
Ah, unexpected little twist there. Mm-hmm. Last show that you binge watched?
Oh, The Sopranos.
Ah, okay.
We just finished it.
You just finished it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I saw it 25 years ago.
Sure, sure.
You know, but you know, it's funny. Joe and I were having this conversation. It hits differently when you are a grown up and when you've like have been married and sure, when you have like kids that are growing up, like, you know, Meadow and AJ, right?
Yep,
funny story. I used to live in the same building as him while he was filming The Sopranos way back in the beginning of 2000. Anyway. So yeah, we just watched The Sopranos. It's different because you understand the jokes differently, right?
Funny. I just watched Broad City all the way through again, okay, for like the third time, but I hadn't watched it in years since I lived in New York. And now having left New York and being older, I watched it and I was like, well, it was very nostalgic and hit differently. I was watching it being like, that is like life. That is like when you're in your 20s in New York, that is it. And like being able to look back on it now differently. So I hear you on that.
Yeah.
Things hit differently as we, you know, yeah, go to different stages in life. What dish did you make last?
Oh, I made pigeon pea stew, white rice, salad, and avocado.
Delicious. I was going to say, is it the one from here? But you probably just have a recipe in your head that you're like, when you do that, it aligns with the one in here, I'm sure. But
it does. It's a different, legume. It's a different legume. It's a different one. So the recipe that is in there is for chickpea stew. Got so it. It's the same method, but I changed it to gandules, which is a very traditional legume in Puerto Rican cooking, and it's called pigeon peas. So they're on the can they're green, but on the inside they're brown.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. If you could pick up a certain skill instantly, what would it be?
Oh boy. If I could pick up a skill, being better at technology, I just
that's a good one. That is a very good one. That's a very good one.
I try hard, and you know, maybe that's something that I need to go back to school for and do, considering that we are like in the business on the internet. Like,
I was just talking to someone who said they took a master's in Instagram, and I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Let me tell you something. I have had, you know, it'll take me like 4 tries to upload a video. Like, I'm just like, come on, guys. Like, seriously, why can't like Meta make this easy for us? I mean,
whenever
we really
I have it, I don't have it.
Or they change the setting, or then I have to like, you know, use a different feature. Like, it's like, you know, whenever you feel good, it's like having a kid. Whenever you think you've got to figure it out, boom, something changes.
I bet. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. If you could live in any decade, which would it be?
Oh, yes. I would live in the 50s. You know, I have this affinity for that. I love to look at photos from my grandparents when they were young, you know, the fashion and what they would do and how they would dress and pose and the different activities. Like, I'm always very into that. I really do. I think I would like to live in the 50s era.
I love it. It's interesting, this question, because I feel like we all kind of get drawn towards, it's why I ask it, you know, I'm always curious to see that. That's interesting to hear. Your last one.
Go.
Donuts or cupcakes?
Donuts. How dare you even ask that question? Who says cupcakes?
I mean, I do.
Really?
But also, I really can't. I just want them both. Can I just? I'm terrible. Yeah.
I know. Maybe you can make like a delicious, like it's like a hybrid dessert.
I'm trying to think of how you combine that word. A donut cake, a cup donut, a cup. I can't combine it. I don't know. But yes.
Yeah.
The answer is yes. And we can, and we will.
Oh,
Actually, I'm seeing a donut now with just a little frosting, like higher, maybe like piped frosting as opposed to a glaze. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Both. They made the cronut.
So anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
And you crushed it. That was your rapid fire round of questions.
I hope I did good.
You did great. Well, please tell everyone where they can find you on social media and the internet, my dear.
Absolutely. I can be found on at The Latina Health Coach on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and my website is www.carlasalinari.com, where you can find a lot more of my recipes, ways that you can work with me. I offer group coaching sessions, cooking classes, one-on-one health coaching as well. And you can buy my book at all major bookstores across the country. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, they all carry the book.
Yes, that's right. Everyone, go get your copy of Abuela's Plant-Based Kitchen, Vegan Cuisine Inspired by Latin and Caribbean Family Recipes. Everywhere books are sold. Carla, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a fun conversation.
This has been a Muzzy Cat production.